let's stop for a minute and think about some things. I'm Emma O'Leary, and welcome to the third episode of What the Hell is Going On? I think that in this episode, before we move on to the monthly shows, it's important to start a conversation about intention. So we've already talked about my goal is to help people have a stable, lasting happiness. But what is the intention behind all that? My intention is to help give people information so they can start to become aware of how it is that their thinking has been formed, and how is it that this thinking has come to be formed, and what does it matter, and is there any reason that you might want to change what your thinking is? So the whole point is to empower people with the reality, the bottom line of what is going on. I am one who sort of has, as you might have heard from my episode one, some issues with just flowering over things. Say, like when I gave the example of I was talking with a spiritual teacher about coming up to a stop sign and it's my turn to go and somebody goes and could have hit me, could have harmed me, and I was angry. What do I do with that anger? And the response I often got, or most of the time got, was just send them love. Well, as a psychotherapist, as a professional, you don't tell people to mask over what their feelings are. It's important to get what is behind the feelings if you're going to make any kind of changes. Feelings come from thoughts. So this is why our thinking, our learned ways of thinking, is very important to become aware of. Because if you want to change how you feel, then you're going to have to change how you think. And if you're not aware of your thinking, then how can you make any changes and how can you feel differently? Someone said to me, what good is it if you just talk about all this positive thinking? Does that really do anything for people? It's not that positive thinking is bad. There are many researches about the power of positive thinking and that kind of thing and how it's good for your health. But if it's masking over your issues, then it's not really doing you any good in the long run. It may be for a momentary thing, and you can transform yourself so you have this more kind of positive way of thinking. But denying it and just masking over what is really there in reality is not helpful. So before we get into our monthly shows, where we'll go more in depth with things and I'll have some interviews with people, I think it's important to get kind of the crux, the bottom line of what it is that we will be talking about more specifically and how that matters. And importantly, what are not only the things that you have learned from your childhood, from the people around you, but the importance of learning what you have learned from your culture and how all that affects your happiness and how you perceive the world. So let me give you a concrete example of how strongly our cultural thinking, or what we have been taught, and our cultural thinking can influence how we interact within the world. So there's a term, non-binary, which is used to denote an individual who doesn't necessarily identify with male or female. Often, somebody who identifies as non-binary will use the pronoun they versus he or she. From the time that we're born and we start to identify with male and female, we're taught these words, he and she. These are words that we were taught when we're young. These are words that we learn in school. These are words that we learn when we're reading and just general kind of terms that we're used to using, he and she. Well, there's an organization called the APA, or the American Psychological Association. And the APA is an organization that actually accredits certain courses that you can get to use for your certifications, not just for people who are psychologists, but in many areas. It also has a very strong component about creating guidelines for how you write, in particular writings when you're in college or you're working doing research, this kind of thing. There's a whole sort of guidelines that they set up for how things should be written. So I was in a conversation today and was told by someone who still works within the APA framework, that the new APA guidelines no longer use he and she. They use they. And we were having a really interesting conversation as to why this might have happened. But the importance of this conversation is that they have decided not to use he or she or he, she. They have decided to use they as a singular pronoun. So it would be they is. And when you stop and you think about this, the mind has a lot of difficulties with that because we're used to he is, she is, they is plural. So you would say they are. But the APA guidelines say that you use the term they as singular. So it's really interesting if you watch your mind when you try to do this, the mind almost gets confused. You have to stop and go, okay, now wait a minute. They, and they isn't plural, it's single. Here at KBOO, it's really interesting because people are very devoted to awareness of other cultures, awareness of people's identities. So it's not unusual to find people who identify with using they. And so having been exposed to that, I'm a little bit more comfortable with that. But in this conversation that I was having, and several people were involved, we were having the whole conversation of how we have been taught within our families and within our schools and within our culture to use he and she. And so it's difficult for the mind to do something different. But stop and think about this. If you had been taught from the beginning that they is singular, they is a very appropriate thing to say, your mind would not have the difficulty. But this has been reinforced so strongly that the mind almost goes like zzz, like has a little, just does not compute that they could be used in a singular context. So that's how strong, it's a simple thing, but how strong our learning is, how much we have been taught these different things. So within this work that I am doing now, you're going to find me challenging a lot of these cultural ways of thinking and a lot of the thinking that we've just come to have in general. And this will be a little bit in your face sometimes. I had a person say to me who had listened to some of this work that I was doing that they thought I needed to be more inclusive, that I wasn't including or acknowledging what had happened to the people in the culture that they had come from. And so I was not being inclusive. And I was kind of confused when I looked at them and I said, I'm talking to everyone. So as I've started to do the work on this podcast, I sort of started with identifying different issues so that we can move past being part of a particular culture or part of a particular group and get to what is the basic thing that we all have in common, which is being human beings. Each and every one of us, when we are born human beings. And as I mentioned before, genetics says that 99.9% of who and what we are is the same genetically. So it's only that 0.1% that makes us different, that gives us the color of our skin or gives us the color of our hair or our eyes. So bottom line, we're all in this together. We're all suffering from this condition called human being. It's interesting, though, if you take, say, white people, do you think that the whites in America are the same as the whites in Europe? Do you think that the blacks in America are the same as the blacks in Africa? I can tell you, having experienced these cultures, that it's just not so. The history and the culturally learned things in the African-American culture of America is very different than what has been taught in Ethiopia, where the people were actually able to continue to live and thrive in their own cultural rituals and things like that. Whereas within the African-American culture, when the Africans were kidnapped and brought to America as slaves, a lot of that dissipated and did not continue. So there is a different way of thinking. And that's not good or bad or right or wrong. As we talked about safety, when it comes to being a person of color in America, then you have increased difficulties because of things that people have learned, in particular white people who have been dominant in this culture for many years and established many of the institutions, and so there is bias within the institutions. Now, there are many people who are white who have no prejudice or no aware prejudice of people of color and who have done many things to help decrease the prejudice that people have run into when they're a person of color. But these things were established by people many, many years ago. Even our government, I heard somebody call it the other day, like a rules of that bodhisattvas live by. And bodhisattva is a term that Buddhists use for somebody who's totally all about equanimity for everyone, compassion for everyone, sees everyone and everything the same. And not just people, actually, insects and animals and things like that. So when our forefathers wrote the rules for our government, in America anyway, they had in mind all of the difficulties that they were faced with being under the rule of a king and how they wanted this country to be different. And this is why our Constitution is a very beautiful thing. So as things develop, it was the white man who was dominant. I mean, we kind of took over all the Indians' land and ran them out. And African Americans certainly weren't part of the culture. We brought them in, and they were slaves for many years until after the Civil War, which was at the end of the 1800s. And then there was all this rights that they didn't have, and especially in the South, where blacks were killed if they spoke up or for multiple different reasons, sometimes for no reason. I was in India once, in the north of India, where the Tibetan government in exile is. I mentioned to you about how the Chinese invaded and took over Tibet in 1950. And so in 1959, the Dalai Lama, who was then the head of the government, left the country and went to India. And in the north of India, they established a government in exile. Out of the kindness of the Indians, they were allowed to do that. So I was there in the north of India. It's a small place, and their movie theaters just consisted of a room with a TV and a VCR. So I went once, and they were playing this movie called Mississippi Burning. If you don't know what Mississippi Burning is, it is the story of two white, one black young people who were in the South, who were civil rights workers, who were murdered. And the FBI went in to try to figure out who had killed them and what had happened to them. The amount of brutality that was showed in this movie towards African Americans due to the huge prejudice of these white people who were part of the Ku Klux Klan was, in my heart, pretty appalling. So this movie was playing at this Tibetan movie theater, and it played for weeks. And I think part of why it played for so long was there was an interest by Tibetans and maybe some other people of looking at how what was happening to Tibetans actually happened in America and how this was overcome. When I would go by and I'd see it, I didn't feel ashamed for me personally because I was against that kind of thing. But I felt very sad for America that this was happening in the 60s. So how does this come to be? How is it that people who often think of themselves as Christian or good people could so hate a group of people like the Germans with the Jewish people? I could go on and on about all the different genocide things, the war in the Balkans and Christians killing Muslims. How does this come to be? So this is why we have to get down to the bottom line. I am not ignoring that people come from different cultures. I am not ignoring that people have different backgrounds. What I am saying is that the bottom line is we have to come back to understanding that each and every one of us is a human being, and this is what we have in common. We are human beings. We all have the same desires and fears and many different things because it's all part of the human condition. My hope is that as we speak out about these different things, as we start to talk about the bottom line, that things can open up more for people. I don't want to smooth things over. I don't want to talk about the positives. I want to say the truth, the bottom line. the bottom line of where does this type of thinking come from. I shared with you about the little boy calling the black man a name in the mall and how this was a four-year-old boy who absolutely had to have been taught that word. You don't know the N-word unless you've been taught it. This is something this boy was taught. So where does that come from, and why would someone teach that? So let's start now for a while to talk about the bottom line. So the bottom line is that you were born, and you're born with your hard drive, as I've described, this body that houses your brain, and the brain and the body makes everything function. And then upon this hard drive, you start to have software put on it. When you're a child, you cry when you need something because you don't have the words to figure out what it is. And we all do that, every single one of us. We're born human beings. But then you're taught different kinds of things. And sometimes they're just unconscious. Our parents were taught things by their parents, who were taught things by their parents, who were taught things by their parents. And these things get handed down. And this is why you can have these wars that started centuries ago. Like in the Balkans, a lot of this killing was fueled by thinking that had started centuries ago and continued on through World War II. I was with a group of people in Nepal at the monastery where I worked, and we were in this office doing a particular task to help out this one Australian Buddhist nun. She was the only nun. The rest of us were lay people, and each and every one of us were from a different country. So I was just kind of talking general as we were doing this task, and I said, well, Americans are this. And so I looked at the German woman who's a friend of mine and sitting across me, and I said, so what are Germans? She said, well, Germans are this. And this kind of came out from how people were just talking. And so I started saying to people, I said, what are the Swiss like, and what are the Australians like? And all of a sudden, this man from Holland spoke up, a young man, and he looked at the German woman, and he said, we will never forget what your people did to our people. We will never forget. And he was quite angry. And I stopped, and I looked at her, and I looked at him, and I said, isn't it interesting that we can carry a hatred and a way of thinking about a particular group of people that happened before we were even alive? Because none of us were alive when this happened. But this old history continues to the point where you hate Germans. But Germans haven't done anything to you, and this time and in your life. Now, sometimes this is harder to do, say, if you're African-American and living in America, because there continues to be prejudiced and unkind, biased things done to African-Americans. It doesn't mean that you can't look at your thinking and that you can't keep your power and not get caught up into going into an old program, a way of thinking, so that you get too much caught up in things. But it's harder when you keep having those things happen. And same if you're Jewish. I mean, all the atrocities being done against Jewish people in America right now, simply because they're the Jewish religion. They're not doing anything to anyone. They're going about living their American life and going to the synagogue and haven't done anything to harm anyone. And people walk in and they kill people. They just walk into the synagogue and kill people. It's like the young man who walked into the church that was mainly full of African Americans and just slaughtered people. None of those people had ever done anything to him. So it's like, where does this thinking come from? So when we start from the bottom line, we start from being born, and we start to be taught things by the things that are around us and the things that we experience with our parents and with our family. We are taught who we are, and what we are, and what the world is, and what people are like, and we're taught all these different things. I gave you the example of the boy who called the black man a bad name in the mall. I told you about the little boy, another episode that was sitting on the table, and he couldn't even talk yet, but he was picking up his father's cell phone and going, yeah, like he's heard his father do on the cell phone. I told you in another episode about me moving my fingers in a certain way, like my mother used to, totally unaware that I even did it, and wouldn't have even known to this day that I did it if my ex-husband hadn't mentioned it when he was looking at a picture of her. So these are the things that we develop very young. And then these become part of who we are and what we are and how we perceive the world. Everybody has their own specific software programs. And it doesn't matter if you're born in the same family, because even then, parents might say the same thing to each child, but the child is hearing it from their own individual mind, taking it in and making sense of it in their own mind. And there's no way that a parent can teach each child exactly the same thing. So we all have our individual ways of thinking. I often use the example of Brad Pitt. I say to people, do you think Brad Pitt is good looking? And somebody said to me, well, you can't use him as an example because everybody thinks Brad Pitt is good looking. And it's like, well, I don't. So who's right? Are you right? And everybody else is right and I'm wrong? The bottom line is there's not a right or wrong. It's just my perceptions of what is in my mind does not look at him and see attractive. And I know that probably 99% of people do. I just don't see it. It's not a type of individual that I'm attracted to. Someone told me once that you're attracted to the rugged type. And it's like, okay, I don't quite know what that means. But if you gave me a choice between Brad Pitt and, say, Mel Gibson, I would be more attracted to Mel Gibson, maybe because he's more of a rugged type. Where did that come from? That I have no idea. That is actually not one that I care to investigate. It makes no difference to me about that. It's a harmless one, and it does not affect my happiness. So we get these programs. We're taught these things. We have this software on our hard drive, and we develop these kind of programs about how to think and act in the world, and we never stop to question them. We just get up each morning, and we reboot our computer, and we go on about the day. So as I've said before, as I've challenged before, do you want to stop and pay attention and see what is there? Now, you can take this work just as far as you want it. You can go in and work with a therapist. You can get involved in a Buddhist center. You can get involved in a Christian center. You can get involved in all kinds of things that will help you look at your thinking and how to look at your thinking. But what is most important of all is that you just become aware that a lot of what you're thinking is not coming from an original thought, it's coming from an old pattern that you have developed on your hard drive. And very importantly, a lot of these programs are faulty. I tell people, if someone will look at you or experience you and look at you in a certain way, and that person is not seeing you, they're seeing the results of their software programs when they look at you. Everybody's going to see something different based upon their software programs. And they're going to like or not like what they see based on their software programs. So you are not what people say and think you are. And that includes your parents. If you were what people said and thought you were, then everybody would see the same thing, but people don't. So as you start to look at these patterns and you start to look at this thinking, you can start to come to terms with what you have control over and what you don't have control over. And these are two very, very, very important things that we'll talk about, because what you can control and what you cannot control have a lot to do with your happiness and the distortions that we have about what we can control. I'll give you an example. I was at work and I was having a debate with one of the people that I worked with, and this other woman jumped in, apparently for whatever reason, I don't know, and got in the conversation. And it was like, well, okay, she's in the conversation. But then I didn't really react, and she got upset with me because she was saying it was my fault that she was feeling the way that she was feeling. And I said to her, if I could control how you think and how you feel, you would be thinking and feeling differently. And this really upset her because she wanted me to take responsibility for how she was thinking and feeling. And I refused to do that because I had no power or no control over that. And the next time I worked with her, she ignored me when I first came in, and then later on came up to me and said, aren't you going to talk to me about what happened? And I said, I'm not coming to you to talk to you about what happened because I have no issue with this. You have this issue that you think that I'm responsible for how you think and feel. And I'm sorry for the idea that you were unhappy by what happened in this situation. That was not my intent. But I don't have an issue. So she calmed down, but at the same time, she was not happy that I would not take responsibility for how she thought and felt. When you start to realize that you have no power to control others, that your main control is with yourself, then you start to come back and you take your own controls. You decrease the helplessness that comes from trying to control things that you cannot control, and it continues on to work to help raise your self-esteem. So I thought it was important to talk about, or at least begin the conversation about, how a lot of what I'm going to be talking about might be a little bit in people's face, because it's difficult to have your ways of thinking challenged because they're so ingrained. It's difficult, but it's also freeing when you start to realize that you do not have to think these things. You are free to choose what you think. So you can start to pay attention, and you can start to become aware, and you can see things that come up, and you can start to question and go, why do I not like black people? I don't know any black people. Why do I not like Jewish people? I don't know any Jewish people. Why am I so angry with men? I don't know what happened. Why do I not like white people? We could go on and on and on. Where does it come from, and does it have validity? So one of the things is that you could have a situation where you've had a problem with somebody of another culture or race. Part of what we'll talk about is actually things that you learn in your culture, and have a validity of not liking this particular person involved with this unpleasant situation you encountered. But to take that and generalize it to a whole race, all whites are bad, all blacks are bad, all Jewish are bad, all Muslims are bad, is actually pretty ridiculous if you stop and look at it, because the only way to make that statement true and valid is to have met every person who's involved in that particular culture or race. And since that's an impossible thing, it's totally illogical and actually ridiculous to say that all people of any particular group or culture or religion are the same, because we each have our own individual minds. We are each taught differently. I have friends from Israel. They are certainly not like the Jewish friends that I have in America. One time when I was staying with an Israeli friend in California, his cousin and I decided to show him some Mel Brooks movies, and Mel Brooks uses a lot of Yiddish in his humor. His cousin is Jewish, and his cousin and I were laughing at the different things going on, but my Israeli friend did not get the jokes. He didn't think anything was funny. He didn't get it because he knew nothing about Yiddish. So this is just a small example of how things are different, even from country to country, no matter what your race. There was that movie that came out, Crazy Rich Asian, and part of what the movie was about was how this Chinese man from Singapore was dating an American Chinese woman. And when he took her back to Singapore for a wedding, his mother did not like her and did not want him with her because she was not of the same culture and the same ways of thinking. And even though she was Chinese and she had some knowledge and information about the culture, she was American and she was not raised within the Singaporean Chinese community. And the man's mother was very much against the relationship. So it was interesting to see. It doesn't matter if you come from the Chinese race. If you're born in a different country and you're taught a different culture, then you think differently. Now, is that good or bad? I tend to think that it's good to experience different cultures and different ways of thinking. But in this particular situation, this was an example of how strong the differences can be just because of the country that you're born into, having nothing to do with the actual race that you were born into. So we'll talk more about this as we go along. As I like to do, I'm going to end this conversation with some thoughts about the power of kindness. If you Google research on kindness, or the power of kindness, however you would want to put it in, you can find some interesting kinds of things. When you see acts of kindness, and if you commit acts of kindness, there are certain hormones that get released in the body. There's one called oxytocin, which has a nickname of the love hormone. It actually helps to increase your heart health and decrease your blood pressure. Another one is serotonin, and there are antidepressants that work on serotonin. So if the serotonin in your body is increased, you tend to be more happy and less depressed. Also, endorphins are released, which can help to reduce pain. So the research has shown that seeing and participating in acts of kindness actually will increase your energy and obviously increase your happiness, decrease your anxiety and stress. So there's all kinds of actually research benefits of giving kindness to others. When you do give kindness, you can feel it. You can feel that there's something pleasant that happens inside of you when you do some kind of act of kindness. Again, you don't have to do these big, huge acts of kindness like giving somebody a kidney. You can do the simple things of stopping and letting somebody cross the walk or donating to a food pantry. I carry food in my car for homeless people. Sometimes when you're a mental health professional, you are a little leery of giving money to people because you don't want to enable any kind of drug addiction. So one way of getting around that is that you can carry food in your car. So I carry food in my car. But this really lovely friend of mine takes it to a whole nother level. She buys little paper bags, and sometimes she draws on them or puts sayings on them, and she puts in a granola bar and maybe some cheese crackers and a thing of water. So she doesn't just give out a granola bar like I do. She gives a whole package to people, which is very, very kind. She is a very kind person, and she is a very happy person, actually. So just the whole idea of the power of kindness and the importance of that. Google it and look at all the different stories. I love how on TV now they're doing stories on kindness and people giving to others. And there's actually organizations that are arising about kindness and putting kindness out in the world. And that's the importance of this work of putting kindness out in the world when there seems to be so much negativity in the world. If you go on YouTube, there's this great song called Kindness with Tori Kelly and the Muppets. It's wonderful. It's very uplifting. And I love listening to it because it just makes me happy just to listen to it. So Google and listen to it. It's actually something you can do right now to increase your happiness. So this is just a note on the power of kindness for the ending of this segment. We'll talk more about this and I'll actually do some interviews with people about the power of kindness in their life. So I hope that you'll stop and think about what it is that I've said. I hope that you will join in my podcast as it starts to become a monthly podcast and email me with your questions and comments, which I include in the shows. I hope, above all, that you're being kind to yourself. Somebody said something to me once. What does that mean? Does being kind to myself mean that it's okay to eat that whole bag of cookies? And I said, well, it varies depending upon what your situation is. If you're diabetic, eating a whole bag of cookies is not a kindness. That's actually a harmful thing to do. If you're not and you're overweight and it's affecting your health, well, definitely you don't want to eat a whole bag of cookies. But if you're thin and for whatever reason you want to eat a whole bag of cookies, then go for it. But what I mean by kindness is making choices that actually are good for you, that help you in some way. So I hope that you're being kind with yourself and not being judgmental and getting down on yourself. We'll talk more and more about how to change your way of thinking so that you can understand how you can transform it so you don't get down on yourself about things you cannot control and what people think and what people say and what people do. And you will learn this power of being kind to yourself. So I'm M.L. Laurie. I hope you join me for my next episode.